So by my calculation, we're on the first canto, chapter 8, text 14. Are we in sync? Very good. We're going to do 14 and 15. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There's a Doppler effect. Let's try to say it at the same pace. It becomes very auspicious. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishna Sadamo Bhagate Dhammiganadi Bisaha Kalanda Sadashumisha Parano Konidodita Narayana Namaskritcha Naram Chaivam Narottama Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat. The Bhagavatam is his bridge, is the sun that has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied with knowledge, religion, etc. Persons who've lost their vision through the dense darkness of the age of Kali should get light out of this Purana. Before beginning our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, we should first offer respects to the personality of God in Narayan, to the Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, the goddess of living mother Saraswati, the author Srila Vyasadeva, and my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada. All right. Antasta Sarva Bhutanam Atma Yogeshwaro Hari Swa Mayaya Vrinod Garbam Vairatya Puru Tantave Antasta Sarvabhutanam Atma Yogeshwaro Hari Swamayaya Vrinod Garbam Vairatya Kuru Tantave Antasta Sarvabhutanam Atma Yogeshwaro Harihi Swamayaya Vrinod Garbam Vairatya Kuru Tantave Antasta Sarvabhutanam Atma Yogeshwaro Hari Swamayaya Vrinod Garbam Vairatya Kuru Tantave Antasta Bhutanam Atma Yogeshwaro Hari Mayaya Garbam
Amen.
within.
Sava.
All. Bhutanam. Of the living beings. Atma. Soul. Yoga Ishvara. The Lord of all mysticism. Hari. The Supreme Lord. Somayaya. By the personal energy. Avrinat, covered. Garbham, embryo. Vairatya, of uttara. Kurutantave, for the progeny of Maharaj Kuru. Translation. The Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of uttara by his personal energy. Also, you say, the Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of uttara by his personal energy. Hey, by the way, who is that in the womb of uttara? Anyone know? Parikshit Maharaj. Actually, Prabhupada said one of the meanings of Parikshit means examiner. When he came out, he was looking, where was that beautiful form that he saw? So, purport by Srila Prabhupada, of course. The Lord of Supreme Mysticism can simultaneously reside within everyone's heart, or even within the atoms, by his Paramatma feature, his plenary portion. Therefore, within the body of uttara, he covered the embryo to save Maharaj Parikshit and protect the progeny of Maharaj Kuru, from whom King Pandu was also a descendant. Both the sons of Dhritarashtra and those of Pandu belong to the same dynasty of Maharaj Kuru. Therefore, both of them were generally known as Kurus. But when there was a difference between the two families, the sons of Dhritarashtra were known as the Kurus, whereas the sons of Pandu were known as the Pandavas. Since the sons and grandsons of Dhritarashtra were all killed on the Battle of Kurukshetra, the last son of the dynasty was designated as the son of the Kurus. And text 15, we're just going to do the translation. And then purport. O Shanaka, glory of the Bhrigu family, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that the Brahma Jyoti, or glowing transcendental effulgence, is resting on Lord Shri Krishna. In other words, the glowing effulgence, known as Brahma Tejas, is nothing but the rays of the Lord, such as the rays of the sun are the sun rays are the rays of the sun disk. So this Brahma weapon also, although materially irresistible, could not surpass the supreme strength of the Lord. The weapon called Brahmastra, released by Ashwatthama, was neutralized and foiled by Lord Shri Krishna, by his own energy. That is to say, he didn't wait for any other's help because he is absolute. Om agena temarandasya agena agena sulakaya jakshu shun militan gena tazani shi gurave namaha. I wanted to say a little something about the artwork, which I don't know if Prabhupada came up with it, but I don't know where it came from, but it used to be called Windows into the Spiritual World. Is it? Very good. And we're going to circle back to that theme in a moment, but just because I'm chanting japa in Swavasa's office, and he's got a beautiful picture of, young Krishna. He's being dressed, and his coward boyfriends are watching, and, you know. And then next to it, there's the Damodar Leela he and Balaram are stealing. So right here in Los Angeles, devotee asked Prabhupada after class, you know, Prabhupada called for questions. He said, Prabhupada, in this picture, Krishna looks like this. But in this picture, Krishna looks like this. And yet in this other picture, he looks still like this. Prabhupada cut him off and said, "Don't worry, when you get there, you'll recognize him." So, and also because they were talking about how to paint a spiritual body. Prabhupada said, they painted a picture and Krishna looked like, well, actually, we're off the track, but no problem. In Detroit, we were on a walk with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw it was Atlas. You know, Atlas, the Greek or Roman god, and he's holding up the earth. And it you know, he's like buff. He's you know, there's furrowed brow, and he's working at it, you know. So they said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada asked, "Who is this?" And they said, "Prabhupada, this is Atlas, and he's holding up the world." Prabhupada said, no. Prabhupada said, "Krishna's a little fat from eating Mother Yasoda's butter." So Krishna's nice and soft. He doesn't have to lift weights, you know, work out before he lifts Govardhan Hill. So something about the art. But I wanted to say, we'll get back to it in a minute. But if there's a theme to this talk, I wanted to talk about unanswered prayers. We think unanswered prayers. Because here we're just about to go into this event is the catalyst for Kunti Devi's prayers. And here we have this dramatic scene of Parikshit Maharaj in the womb, the last of the Kuru dynasty, and it's a parting, you know, vindictive act of spite. Ashwatthama sends the Brahmastra, you know, to kill the last of the dynasty. Krishna immediately saves him. And then Kunti begins to offer her prayers. So somebody sent me a cartoon. I don't know if you can visualize it. I'll try. But God is sitting at his computer. And it says, "What happened to all the unanswered prayers?" Because everyone's praying. We're praying for all kinds. Prabhupada gives the example of what? In Germany, they all prayed that, "Oh, send my son back, send my father back, send my, you know, husband back." And they were all killed. So they became ripe for communism because they thought, "Well, I offered prayers and didn't come." So the picture is that a God is there and he's looking, you know, with the long gray beard and the whole thing, and he's looking at his computer. And he's got this, "Oh, that's what happened." Because it says spam box and it's full of all the unanswered prayers, you know. Just, he missed them, you know. So, because here it's describing Krishna's the master of mystics. And he's inside every atom. He's the supreme controller. So he could answer our prayers. Isn't it? If he's the master of mystics, it's no big deal for him to just adjust things accordingly as he likes. He has the power. So why doesn't he? I mean, let's look at it for a minute. Let's look at Kunti. She had everything. Noble lineage, she's a princess, the five Pandavas are her sons. But what happened? She lost her kingdom, she lost her husband, she lost her first son, Karna. I mean, it's very dramatic when you think about it. And how does she end up? What are the conclusion of her prayers? She says, "Give me more. Bring it on. Because by this, I remember you." I'm going to get to the bottom, and then we're going to make the case for it. So the point is, I'll get to the bottom line. She's praying that, "Let my love be like the Ganga. It cannot, anyone, you know, stop the Ganga. Good luck with that. You know, it's flowing right into the ocean." So here we're reading how Krishna saves his devotee. Right? He's saving Maharaj Parikshit. It's an amazing mystical event. When else was the same Maharaj Parikshit, who was so amazingly saved, when's another time he was in deep distress? Yeah, he was cursed to die within 7 days. Did Krishna come and get rid of this? Why didn't Krishna save him then? He saved him here. Why didn't he save him there? What was the logic? What was the reason? Well, I guess I'll say this first. What does Yudhisthira Maharaj say the most amazing thing in this world is? Mahaprasadam. Rukmini Dwarkadish on a festival day. Yes, young men. You know the old saying about, oh, I see the light at the end of the tunnel? Anyone know what the light at the end of the tunnel is? It's the train coming at you. Confirmed. I've had the whistle of the train. We all face it. We are all going to be in this position. Shakespeare. Sans hair, sans teeth, sans everything. Everything's lost. Every single one of us will be in this exact same position. It's not unique. It is the essence of the human condition. So, and you know, people offer prayers for so many things. And they have their material calculations. Light a candle. Build a temple on top of a mountain. You go to India, practically. Same thing in Burma. Anywhere you go, any hill has got a stupa or a temple on top. Because they figure you're closer to God. You light a kite and tie a prayer on it. Because that way, you know, it's a proximity issue. I mean, if you think about it, if God is in your heart and can hear your silent prayer, then do you really need to pray? I mean, why do you need a delivery system? Krishna's in your heart. Savasya Chaham Hridi Sannivista. He knows everything in you. Why do you even need to verbalize or vocalize? He knows it before you even know it. So, where is it? Hey, come on, Krishna, come through. Cure my cancer. Where are you? So, it depends. My point is, how do we measure? We have a set of expectations. You know, they say, I'm sorry to use bullying, I'll just say anyway. You know, small potatoes. They say it's when you go for the meaningless thing, you go for the small potatoes. I've used this example before. I'm going to use it again because it does the job. I've forgotten your name. Bhakta Davis, right. Now it comes back to me. So Bhakta Davis, I'm visiting here for a few days by Krishna's grace. And suppose I say, you're a nice brahmachari. You know, you could, maybe you want to buy some books or a lecture series or something like that. Here's $100. So you're thinking, well, he's not so bad. Not as bad as I thought. Hey, Bhadrarayan Swami, visit more often, you know. I'm feeling quite happy. Feel that I've singled you out for a special relationship. Fantastic. So you say, hey, you know, Jai Kush, that's, you know, I thought he was a mean guy, but he's not so bad. Gave me $100. So Jai Krishna says, oh, that's funny. He just gave me $1,000. And you find out I gave everybody, you're happy with $100, right? I mean, you're a devotee. We don't care about these things. It's off the track, but that's whatever. We were in the, it was San Diego, and it was busy on a Saturday morning. So many people were coming and going. And there's a lady, I've known her for years, I've known the family. So I gave her a little Mahaprasad. So she put it in the back of the temple on a ledge, and then she went up to take darshan of the deities. I said, hey, you know, you might want to keep an eye on that. She laughed. She said, you know, that's true. She said, a couple years ago, my daughter was dancing Janmashtami, you know, some Krishna Leela dance. She had diamond earrings. They fell on the floor. You know, places packed. She couldn't find them. Next morning, devotees cleaning up, found the earrings, immediately gave them back. She said, you know, we were here for Govardhan Puja. Temple room was packed. My husband left our brand new fancy $3,000 camera on one of the ledges. Next morning, devotees are cleaning up, immediately gave it back. She said, but twice I've had my Mahaprasad stolen. I said, you know, we have a different set of priorities. You know, this is the same propensity, different priorities. So, my point is, how do we measure? What, back to the 100 and to the 1,000. If you think you're sat, the 100 is, okay, great. So God, answer my prayers in this world. Fix my tooth, fix my cancer. You know, Prabhupada said about marriage. Does anyone know why marriage, I can say this as a sannyasi, plus I'm leaving soon. Does anyone know why marriage, and you know, householders are the foundation of our society. You know, half the Mahajans are householders, so don't go mental on me and send me a mean email. And just catch the point. Prabhupada said, do you know why marriage is like a fortress, like a big fort? Anyone know? Prabhupada, I heard Prabhupada say this personally. He said, half the people want to get in, and half the people want to get out. So one man is praying, or one woman is praying, oh, find me a nice husband. Another one saying, oh, get rid of this guy. You know? So we're all, Prabhupada tells a story about the shopkeeper comes home at night, puts his head on the pillow. He's worked hard. He's just about to go to sleep. And he thinks, oh, geez, did I lock the back door? Some thief will come and steal everything in my Please, God, I hope I lock the back door. Now, there's a man somehow or other by the, you know, the vagaries of life, you know, somehow or other, he's destitute. He has a young family to take care of. He has to resort to stealing. So he's going out and he's saying, oh, please, God, I hope someone left their back door open. So one set of prayers is, please, I hope I lock the door. The other set of prayers is, please, I hope the door is unlocked. Prabhupada said, in this way, God is perplexed. You know? So people are we're all calculating. But what, back to Kunti Devi, and let these things happen again, what is real help? What is real saving? Save me. But what is saving? Prabhupada gives the example of a dunking stool. You know, a dunking stool, they have you tie the person and you hold, it's like whatever you want to call it. It's the original waterboarding. You hold the person underwater, and then just when the lungs are about to explode, you hold them up and, you know? So is that, they will consider that when you're brought out of the water and can breathe oxygen, it's considered the greatest relief. But is it really happiness? What's going to happen next to you? Underneath you go again. So really, all you're doing is prolonging their suffering. The so-called saving in this, if there is an alternative, that's my point. He's happy with 100, but all of a sudden when you realize everybody else got 1,000, then what is this? What does Dhruva Maharaj say? You know, broken glass and a jewel. This world, if it's all there is, well, then make the best of a bad bargain. You know? Put together whatever you can. There was a guy. And we were at a funeral. I don't know if you know Dharma Sethu. Does a lot of the pujas in San Diego. Yeah, everyone knows. He's such a saintly person. So I was there also because I knew the family. So everyone, when they gave their eulogy, you know, they're glorifying this man. They're saying he was always on call. If you needed this man, you could reach out and you could get him. You know, if you were locked in a jail in Timbuktu and you had one call, he's the guy to call. So everyone kept saying he was always on call, he was always on call. After about 15, 20 minutes of this, there was a bring, 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 bring. Your cell phone went off. Everybody's looking, it's not there, you know. Turns out that the guy in the coffin, he had his cell phone in the suit they were burying him. Dharma Sethu had to reach in and shut off the phone. Dharma said to me, well, he's out of range now. You know, no roaming charge, you know, the guy's gone. So we're all going to be in that condition. What are we going to have to show for it? At the end of the day, what do we have to show for it? All we do is, it's again and again and again. Cyclical. So if one to become comfortable, the soul is called stanu. Stanu, one of the meanings of the word stanu, it's actually used in this verse. One of the meanings of stanu means steady. Now the perverted reflection, just like kama becomes, you know, love and lust, you know, it's perverted reflection. So the perverted reflection of the tendency of the nature of the soul to be constant, steady, is we become comfortable in any condition. We become acclimatized. Lord Indra and the hog that became cursed. Lord Indra became cursed to become a hog, and he became comfortable. Hey, I got my wife. I got my, you know, look at their legs. Look at that snout. Oh, man, she's a dream come true. We become conditioned to that. We become used to that position. And therefore, we become acclimatized to this world. But what if there actually is an alternative? What if there actually is a spiritual world, a kingdom of God? What if this is not my real home? Back to windows of the spiritual world. This is where we belong. We don't belong here in these collapsible contraptions, full of grief and anger and anxiety and lust. It's not, we're, try to understand how foolish. Like they say, there's no fixing stupid. You ever heard this saying? I mean, obviously our Shastra says it in a much more eloquent way. But Sumedasa, those with sufficient brain substance, just step back for a moment. We are expected to believe that everything comes from nothing, from a singularity, from a tiny, you know, infinitesimally small, infinitely dense, and then somehow or other, from that, everything comes. As whoever the guy was at MIT said, it's the original free lunch. And we're supposed to believe that. Everything came from nothing. That's the basic theme. Of course, what that nothing is, Sariputta says you got to take, you know, 15 chalkboards to explain it mathematically. Everything came. And that there's no designer behind the thing. I was on a plane. The short version is I was on a plane going to India. The guy next to me, I'm dressed like this. So I mean, you know, Sherlock Holmes. The guy says, oh, I suppose you're a Krishna Bhakta. You know, okay, great. You got that one right. I said, and he said, but I am an atheist. At that point, you know, I was thinking, this guy, it's going to be a long flight. But anyway, I was trying to, you know, I'm not a very compassionate person. I've got so many shortcomings. This is one of them. I thought, I want to read. I'm not going to deal with this guy for, you know, 12 hours to Japan. So I asked him, what do you do? He said, I designed the 777 Dreamliner for Boeing. I said, really? I said, did you do it all by yourself? He said, oh, no. He was in charge of the aerodynamics team. I said, how many teams? Oh, there's the mechanical, there's the electrical, there's all kinds of teams. So they were like, I said, how many teams? He said, well, probably about 15. I said, okay, how many on a team? He said, at least 10, 12. Let's be conservative. Let's take 10. So 10, 15 teams, you're up to 150. 150 to design that 777 Dreamliner. Now, just quickly, they crash. They're the biggest pollutant on the planet is jet fuel. They're expensive, isn't it? What else? I mean, they're not very comfortable. It's like being in the womb, crammed in those things. I was between two sumo wrestlers that were passing sushi back and forth one time, and I was in the middle seat. That was a long flight. So, I mean, you know, they're not. And how fast do they go? How many people do they carry? They carry, what, 350? 600. Let's bust out. 600, okay? And how fast can they travel when they really push it? 600 miles an hour. All glories to our Boeing engineer. Now compare it to Mother Earth. I mean, it's one of unlimited, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, unlimited planets, right? And the Earth goes around the sun, I think it's 18,000 miles a second. Try that in your 777 and spin it at the same time. Because the Earth is rotating on its axis, and it's going around the sun. Do you ever get a warning from Bhumi? Hey, buckle up, man. You know?
about to hit some turbulence. We don't even know we're moving. So I said to the man, I said, you want me to swallow that everything came, that there's no God, and it took 150 of the best and brightest to create Brand X, which so many flaws and faults. And yet I'm supposed to believe that this entire creation happened by chance. Do you know that there's no such word as by chance in Sanskrit? Oh, what there is the word adrista. Adrista, it comes from the word darshan. Adrista means you don't see it. There's a cause, you just don't see it. So I'm supposed to swallow that? Let's go for seamless logic. Just, you know, I'm from Missouri, show me. Just give me some seamless logic. Everything we experience, it's a progression here. I'm asking you to believe that there's a spiritual world, there's a kingdom of God, where there's a tiny bluish boy, Sham, who's controlling everything and is our best friend. I mean, that's a leap, you know. I mean, let's be honest. It appears to be a leap. If you've got this no-brain Sumedhasa that accepts everything came from nothing. Help me with this one. Everywhere we see order or pattern or symmetry, it is our universal around the globe since time immemorial experience. Wherever there is a sophisticated system, there's an intelligence behind it that visualized it, manifested it, and sustains it. That's our experience. As soon as you remove this, yeah, I mean, imagine if there was no temple president, no devotees, no temple commander, no money. What would happen? Come back in 2 years, not 2 years, come back in 20 years. What will this building look like? What is the natural state of things? Dissolution. Decay. Rust never sleeps. The mode of ignorance never sleeps. So my point is, simple point. Let's start from that. Wherever we see order, pattern, system, there's intelligence behind it. What is the nature of that intelligence? Let's deal with that in a second. You can't defeat it. I mean, anyway, they have an argument, but it's nothing to write home about. Okay, so design is there. Now, design means intelligence. Now I'm going to say why intelligence means personality. Because there's a design. Just like I know the wind is blowing because I see the leaves are moving. I see order, pattern, system, symmetry. There must be design. Design means there must be intelligence. Now, God is Purnam. Om Purnam Adha Purnam. Right? Everyone agrees? God is Purnam. If I have Prabhupada's example, but I'll give you a mathematical one first. If I have a set of numbers, and I take a subset of those numbers, can I have in that subset a number that's not in the original set? Is it possible? I mean, devotees tend to like tune out algebras out the window, but, and it's on one hand, it's a good thing. Prabhupada's example is better, but Vedic examples. If I take a drop of water out of the ocean and I analyze that drop of water, can I have any chemical, any element in the drop that's not in the ocean? Is it possible? No. Now, if God is the original set, Purnam, everything, Aham Savasya Prabhaho, everything emanated from God, then we as a subset, as a derivative, cannot have any quality that the absolute, the origin, does not have. We're persons. We have identity. We have relationship. So you go from order, pattern, symmetry. You go to design. Design takes you to intelligence. Intelligence to be Purnam must mean a personality. As soon as you say personality, there has to be activity. Isn't it? And what is God's activity? He's like a wallflower. He's like, my parents got me a fish tank one time. How much fun? I mean, I don't want to offend anybody. We have any fish affectionarios out there. An ant farm. Anybody ever have an ant farm? Okay. How long can you spend fascinated by that ant farm? It doesn't last long. And God's only business, he's like catcher in the rye. He's simply looking down and maintaining us. I mean, what don't you tell that? Suppose you had somebody stalking you. Say, get a life. Don't you say that? You know, if all they want to do is be next to you, stand there. Say, come on, man, get a life. So God has no life? God's only life is worrying about us? I mean, Krishna does. He's a super soul. He's inside every atom, inside everyone's heart. Great. But that's all God is? He has no independence. So from order, design, intelligence, person. Person means activities. And what are those activities? The fleeting, futile, petty, paltry, pernicious. I could go on with peace for a long time. That's all God does? If God made this world for us to enjoy, which is a famous thing they say, what's the best answer to that? Or what's a good answer? You may have a better one. This is the best God could come up with? This rinky-dink Mickey Mouse? He said, if you say, hey, God made this world for us to enjoy, you know, God made this world for us to enjoy, then the question becomes, this is the best God could do? Brand X, birth, death, disease, old age? What? And God's only activities is watching us? Waiting for, you know, in case you trip, he's going to catch us? So, order, symmetry, design, intelligence, personality means activities. God has activities, and those activities cannot be limited, mundane, petty, paltry activities. And who's active alone? Anybody? You know the best way to break someone down? I mean, I'm a manager, so I am not practicing this, and you know. But the worst torture, worse than waterboarding, you know what the worst torture is? Solitary confinement. The problem with solitary and sensory deprivation. You lock somebody up all by themselves and you blow out their senses. You keep the lights on all the time, then you turn the lights off, you turn the lights on, you just blow out their senses. The problem with it is it breaks down the people so badly, they're useless. They just collapse psychologically. Isolation and sensory deprivation, it's the fastest way to turn somebody into a basket case. And they want to find their home and home, you know? So, point is that activity. And what are those? And activity means relationships. Means with someone. So we've moved from everything came from nothing to the fact that there's a transcendental world where there's a transcendental supreme person. And Madhvacharya is sitting like this. And he's not a precursor to Winston Churchill or an early hippie. Why is he sitting like this? Because there's two. There's the living entity and there's Krishna. And then we don't have time to get into it, but it's very logical. It is seamless, profound logic. If there's a person, and there's a transcendental person, God, Krishna, and I have a relationship with them, then to move from neutral rasa, it only has a small aspect. But as you just like, what is it, you know, Prabhupada goes, you know, from the air is sound, and then fire has form, and then what is it? Earth has, what do you know? Then water has taste, and it becomes fuller and fuller and fuller till you come to earth, which has the fullest. Similarly, Madhurya Ras. You can make a case that it is the fullest manifestation of love. It is the most complete manifestation of relationship, of surrender, of sweet taste. So the fact that we believe that there are Radha and Krishna dancing in the spiritual world and we can participate in that is not sentiment. It's not escapism. It's not fanaticism. It's not wishful thinking. It is profoundly logic. In fact, it's the only logical conclusion. Therefore, this is the point I was getting at, believe it or not. Is the business of Krishna just to save us, which means prolong our suffering in this paltry, miserable material world? Is that an actual benediction? If I know, if this building was on fire, Krishna protect, let's say if a building, not this building, let's suppose a building was on fire, and you're completely, you know, smoke, inhalation, and your last, you know, breath, and a fireman comes in, you think, oh, thank heaven. And he says, yeah, I'm just in time. Have a glass of lemonade. Because your throat's parched. Have a sandwich. And then he's gone. What the, you know? Come on, man. Where's the door out? Where is safety? That's the truth. So Krishna answers prayers, but those prayers are like Kunti's prayers, that how do I get out of this world? How do I become Krishna conscious? How do I, and even what to speak of get out of this world, how do I just remember Krishna? Because Prabhupada said, I was sitting, the temple room was over here. Prabhupada said, you think you're sitting on the floor? I am sitting in the hand of Krishna. Devotees are fearless. Of course, we do wear seatbelts. Prabhupada said, devotees are fearless, but they're not fools. So don't make Krishna, you know, work over hard. But the point I'm trying to make is that one can read this and say, well, Krishna saved, you know, Parikshit Maharaj in the womb. Why won't he save me? He is saving us. He's saving us by getting us out of this material world. That is actual salvation. And therefore, that's a done deal. If we serve Krishna, we go back home, back to Godhead. In fact, Prabhupada said that, yeyatamam prapadyante, you know, as they surrender, I reciprocate. Prabhupada said it's not a one-to-one ratio. You know, I take one step to you, you take one to me. Prabhupada said it's a 10-to-1 ratio. Did you take one step to Krishna? Krishna takes 10 to you. So, what should be our focus? What should we pray for? What is the one guaranteed success? Krishna always wins. Krishna is always successful. Even in the Bible, where they say the Lord's Prayer, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, even they get it. Krishna's will is always done. Krishna is always victorious. He's the master of mystics. Then why doesn't he answer my prayers? What does Prabhupada say? You call out nectar devotion. You call out once, Hey Govinda, and Krishna will never forget. I think it's St. Augustine or St. Anthony, I forget. It was a young man, he was a prince, and he prayed. He was a pious person, but he was a sense enjoyer. He said, God, give me celibacy, just not yet. Follow? He wanted to enjoy, you know? So Krishna, we have all called out. We're not here by chance. I'm here because somebody threw a dog in old Japati from Mahaprasadam and I showed up. But the rest of you, we have all called out, Hey Govinda. Put our hands up like Draupadi with the sari and said, Hey Govinda, Krishna, please. And here we are. He is fulfilling our desire. He is answering that prayer. And he's answering that prayer in the best way. That these windows will not just be theoretical windows. We will actually join in those pastimes. Prabhupada's like, you wake up. Prabhupada said, you wake up, and here comes Krishna, here's the cowherd boys, and you just join in. You just join in. That's where we... And this world is just like a dream. How much time do we have? We should end. But I want to give one last Sataputta example. One of the heroes of our society, Sataputta Prabhu. There's a psychological experiment you can do. Because we're all convinced, but this is real. This body is world is real. This world is real. My experiences are real. And you're asking me to believe some theoretical something. I'll end there and you can all go home. No. The Prabhupada gives the example of a daydream and a night dream. We're all convinced that this is real. Prabhupada said the only difference between a daydream and a night dream, we all believe, people die of heart attacks. They're being eaten by a tiger. People they think there's some beautiful woman embracing them or beautiful man. Prabhupada, I heard Prabhupada say it here. A male ghost haunts a woman and a woman ghost haunts a male. You do not know these things? I was thinking ghosts. I guess there's a lot of things I don't know. So, But we think that the night dream is a dream. The only reason we think the night dream is a dream and the daydream is real is because the daydream is longer. We spend more time in the daydreaming state than the night dreaming state. But in reality, they're both a dream. Daydreaming, night dreaming. There is ephemeral. Sariputta's example. The reason, anyway, I don't have much time. Sariputta's example. You can, there. This is a thought experiment, not a thought, it's a psychological experiment, they've done it. You can get glasses, you wear glasses, and it inverts, like a pyramid, it makes everything topsy-turvy. You know, the ceiling's up and the floor's up and the ceiling's down. It inverts everything. And then they try to make people do things, like bounce a ball. Imagine if I was trying to bounce a ball and instead of going down, everything was going up. I mean, that's a trip. You know what was a real trip, Sariputta said, was try to pour a glass of water into a cup. You actually have to hold the cup and pour the water down, you know, because everything's reversed. But here's the far out thing. Within a short period of time, I forget what Sariputta, it was like 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, you get used to it. And you can very easily bounce a ball, although you're seeing everything upside down. You can very easily pour a glass of water upside down and hold the cup like this. And you know what the real freaker is? When you take the glasses off and come back to quote-unquote reality, you're completely flummoxed. You have to relearn again how to bounce a ball. You know, when things are normal, how to put... Because you became acclimatized to that reverse, inverse logic. That's where we are. We think this body is the thing. We think, you know, this world is the real thing. And Krishna's saving us. So, we can in there, but when I was a kid, and I promise we'll end here, I remember that I heard somebody say that you only use some percentage of your brain. And some people, that's a question, but that's another issue. At some point, let's be generous. Let's suppose they use 25% of their brain. And as Kali Yuga progresses, that is being generous. Anyway, I mean, they believe that you can kill. Here's far-out logic. Supposedly, the most noble, intelligent, refined people in the world, knowledgeable, men of wisdom and women of wisdom, are on the Supreme Court. And they're debating that you can kill a baby in the womb at the end of the first trimester. Actually, the logic is you can kill a baby in the womb until the baby can live outside on its own, till it can sustain itself on its own. And that's their cornerstone logic. Up until then, it's fetal tissue. But once it can sustain it... But a baby, once the baby's out of the womb, can that little baby sustain itself on its own? What will happen to a little six-week-old baby? You leave it alone. What will happen? It's finished. It's finished in no time. What about up to 3 years? Practically speaking, by the same logic, you could kill a kid up to 6, 7, 8 years old, isn't it? You know, don't like that one. Just say it's fetal tissue. Even though it's walking outside, it still needs to be sustained. And that logic is accepted. That everything came from nothing. That logic is accepted. That this whole ordered universe happened by chance. That logic is accepted. So you got to realize. So here's what I used to think. I remember hearing that, you only use a certain percentage of your brain. What would you do? What would I be thinking if I was thinking, if I used the rest of my brain? I'm only using 10%. And if I was using the other 90%, what would I be thinking? I mean, I was a kid. I was thinking, X-ray vision, would I be able to see the future? Who knows, you know? What if we accept, I'm going back home, back to Godhead, that this is reality, that Krishna is real. Prabhupada was on a walk in Detroit. I don't know if you were there. Prabhupada was walking. He turned. I was way in the back, you know, I still am an insignificant person. Prabhupada stopped, turned to all of us, and said, I know that you're all atheists, but there really is Krishna. And just turned around and kept walking. It was like, everybody just got their mind completely blown, you know? By logic, by reason, Asita Devala Narada Vyas, the best of people, the cream of human society, They all believe that there's an absolute, that there's a supreme, and that there's a soul. You got these munchkins, you know, these mental midgets. They can say everything came from nothing. So my simple point is, what if instead of worrying about, oh God, my unanswered prayers, fix my toe, fix my this, bring me a wife, get rid of my wife, whatever it is, what if that wasn't an issue? I'm going back home, back to Godhead. Krishna's real. My only business is to serve Krishna's mission. Let me just, that's the only prayer I should be asking. What was the one question Prabhupada asked his Guru Maharaj? When's prasadam? Well, who was the wife of the fifth monarch? You get these, you travel, you get these stump the Swami questions, you know? Who was the, what difference does that make in your life or my life? Really? Who was the, I mean, I'm not minimizing Shastra, but. So what was the one question Prabhupada asked his Guru Maharaj? How can I serve you? How can I serve you? What if that was, I'm speaking to myself, I mean, you're all on that, but how can I serve you? How can I serve Krishna? How can I serve Prabhupada's mission? How can I serve the Vaishnavas? And if that becomes our prayer, like Kunti's prayers are about to begin, and as all the great Mahajans, if that becomes our prayer, then we will walk right through those windows of the spiritual world and be there with Krishna and leave all of this unhappiness and futility behind. It's real. Okay, we can end there. Any burning question? Are we? All right. We'll end. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
So, it was much intensive. What we're going to sort of reference out in the Pathay this morning, because we're trying to do some things. So, in the Pathay is breakfast this morning.
Hare Krishna, thank you for taking a good lesson from a fool. The qualification is yours.
Are you here for a few more days?
No, I've been here for a few days. And I leave tomorrow before Mangal Arati. Because I have to be back in San Diego by 8 a.m.
Would you have like a few minutes to meet perhaps later today?
Are you going to tell me the secrets of the universe? Or are you going to how to solve everything in ISKCON? What's your... Sure.
Okay.
Well, why don't we take Prashad today? I deal with nuts all day long. What's a few more?
No, I know.
I'm half crazy. Well, what is the theme of why we're talking?
I just want to show you some new projects I'm working on, and I just want to get your take and opinion and your guidance.
Okay. For what it's worth? I mean, for my side, what is good? No, I appreciate that, sure. Why don't we take prasadam? Because I do leave today, and I got a lot going on, so can we take prasadam together?
Sure.
Can you show me during prasadam? Explain to me?
Yeah, I can do that.
Because I don't know when else I'm going to... Frankly, I don't know when else I'm going to do it. And I've already promised my time to others.
Okay.
So I spend time with you and I break my promise to others who are in queue before you. Welcome to my world.
Appreciate it.
Okay, I'll meet you there. I'll meet you, Prashant.
Okay. Thank you.